Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. When you think about enemies of free speech in Asia, North Korea comes to mind as the biggest villain. South Korea, on the other hand, has a robust democracy and a thriving economy. It's perhaps the most wired country in the world, with the highest number of broadband connections per capita and an internet penetration approaching 90%. But in the past few years, censorship in South Korea has increased dramatically. The number of censored articles doubled after President Lee Myung-bak took office in 2009, and the crackdown continued. South Korea police are regularly making web administrators remove online posts, particularly those considered pro-North Korean. Some journalists say they're operating in the worst media climate for South Korea in the past three decades. Joining us by telephone from the capital Seoul are Steve Herman and Park Kyung-sin. Steve is the Voice of America's Northeast Asia Bureau Chief and President of the Seoul Foreign Correspondents Club. Kyung-sin, or KS, is a professor at the Korea University Law School and one of the nine commissioners for the South Korean Agency for Communication Standards. Kyung-sin has testified as an expert in high-profile free speech cases and is the author of the book Crime of Disseminating Truth. Welcome to Global Journalist.
Hello from Seoul.
Good morning.
Good to have you on. Critics blame the rising censorship on the Lee administration and businessmen with political interests. Earlier this year, employees at two major broadcasting companies went on strike, particularly because of what they perceive as government interference in news coverage. Professor Park, would you put the current censorship in historical context?
The laws have been oppressive in the past on those people who were actively fighting for democracy. And when we spoke of free speech issues in the past, we usually spoke of application of national security law violations applied against student activists or people arrested during demonstrations as such. The past 3 years, a new phenomenon emerged in South Korea where those laws and prosecutions were applied against what we consider the innocent, ordinary people, for instance, television documentary producers or bloggers, no-name bloggers who haven't shown any political orientation. And this has a tremendous chilling effect on people because South Korea, having been on confrontation with North Korea for over years now, of course there was much political censorship across the board, and people have accepted a little bit of that. But now it's being extended to ordinary innocent citizens who are not professionally or ideologically oriented against the government.
Now, Steve,
one of the examples is Minerva, the economic pundit who was imprisoned for 100 days for criticizing the government's exchange policies. And then there's another one that I'm going to talk about.
We'll get into some specific cases, including your own, a bit later. But Steve, I wanted to kind of give in a broad brush. Why is the online communications seem to be particularly targeted?
Well, because perhaps it is the most pervasive for what the government defines as harmful content. And that when something is deemed harmful content, and that can be, you know, pornography, illegal information, propaganda from North Korea, the government has the right and the ability to wipe this out. Now, one thing they've done here is that to get on the most popular sites, blogger sites, you have to give your real name and national identification number. This was supposed to cut down on the amount of slanderous comments and swear words and things like that. Surveys have shown that it hasn't really reduced those sort of problems.
Right.
And the end result has been is that most of 35 million, in fact, most of these IDs have been hacked, presumably by hackers in China, who now have obtained the names and the national ID numbers of the majority of South Korean citizens.
Now, so in Freedom House now rates the press in South Korea as partly free rather than free. And in February, Freedom House said it was deeply concerned by the indictment of a photographer and activist for violating South Korea's national security law and sharing a Twitter posting from the North Korean government with his followers, and really seemed to be a simple attempt at satire.
Well, if that's illegal, I should be in jail, because on my Twitter feed, as a correspondent here, I post a lot of these ridiculous statements and rhetoric that come out of Pyongyang, and I'm doing it from South Korea. So there should be a lot of other people, including myself, who should be thrown in jail.
So do they treat international journalists differently than local journalists, I suppose?
Maybe the fact that I'm doing it in English instead of Korean is one reason that that I haven't come to the attention of the authorities, perhaps.
Right. And Kyung-sin, there seem to be lots of online posts that get netizens prosecuted in South Korea. What are some examples? And then after that, and I know yourself, you were prosecuted for one of your blog posts. You give some examples, if you could tell us what happened in your case.
Yes. Well, Steve, if you are funny and if your posting becomes popular, I'm sure you will get prosecuted.
I tend to just stay away from commentary or satire. Maybe I'm just not funny enough to come to the attention of the authorities.
All right. Well, keep pushing, Steve. We'll see.
many people suspect that Minerva was also prosecuted, while others spreading the same content were not, because Minerva had 200,000 following. Even now, Chinese government has been studied on its censorship behavior, and people suspect that the Chinese government targets only the popular postings and bloggers. Now, make no mistake about it, the internet has opened up many venues for expression in South Korea, and being the most wild nation, free speech is robustly protected in a sense that there are so many postings and so many bloggers speaking freely, and the government has just not caught up in responding to each one of them. But when it does target some of the popular bloggers and netizens, it does create huge uproar across the society, creates a lot of anger, divisions among people, and that is really hurting the society as a whole. We talked about online crackdown, but offline crackdown is just as worse, and I think that also comes from the anger created by the crackdown online. There was a cruel crackdown on people resisting removal from a redevelopment zone, where six people died. There was a cruel crackdown on a strike going on, strike resisting lay in an automaker's plant. That resulted in 12 people committing suicide because the crackdown was too severe. And, you know, those flashpoints have not really helped the country in going forward, in creating a stronger social safety net and making other necessary progress. But anyway,
to your case, you've written a lot about in your blogs about these censorship cases, and you're one of the few ardent critics of the Internet Regulatory Board. And so tell us about what happened with you.
I'm one of the nine commissioners of Korean Communication Standard Commission, which has which deliberates upon some of the online content and takes them down if the commission finds it illegal. Now, the commission does so without notifying the author of the post, not to mention giving the author an opportunity to participate in the deliberation.
Right.
And I thought that that is very unfair, not just to the author, but also to the people who otherwise would have been exposed to the post. And keeping people from seeing and hearing some content and not others, of course, is a censorship, not just on the poster, but also on the people. So I started running a blog where I discussed some of the censorship decisions. And to illustrate my commentary on the commission's decision, I posted some of the real content that was taken down. And one of the content happened to be pictures of male penises that are just clinically dry with no sexual narrative. Something that you will see in medical textbooks or in sex education books. Now the prosecutor has indicted me for violation of
because you retweeted the image. Is that right?
I just used the traditional blog. I didn't use Twitter.
Oh, you did. Okay, I got you.
So reposted it. Yes.
Okay.
I think one thing that's important to point out is that with Twitter and other services, there are a lot of people spreading falsehoods aside from, you know, problems with political speech and where is the definition of pornography and obscenity and all of that. And you know, the situation here in South Korea is that defamation is a criminal offense, and really, if you're charged with this, the instead of like in other countries, the burden of proof really doesn't lie with those who've been defamed, but on the defendants. And I think a lot of journalists and other people would be more comfortable with these sort of things being perhaps moving forward as civil cases,
right,
rather than as criminal prosecution.
So decriminalizing defamation. And just briefly, Kyung-sin, could you explain a couple of the other laws that are being used to restrict freedom of speech in South Korea?
Sure. Speaking of criminal defamation, back in 2005 and 2009, back in 2005 through 2007, there was 136 actual prison sentences for defamation in Korea. Now, compare that to 146 prison sentences for defamation for the world's total. You can see how active Korean prosecutors are. Now, and also, it's a crime to hurt another feeling by words. So it's a crime to insult another person. And also, we have truth defamation, where true words about another can also be criminally punished for defamation, even in absence of any violation of privacy.
So truth is not
instance,
a defense.
For instance, a worker who picketed in front of an employer's on employer's workspace, saying, you know, this worker, this employer has not paid wages. He was criminally prosecuted for criminal defamation when the non-payment was true. So these laws have really limited people's venue for discussing and evaluating each other and the government's policies. And that has been so far limited to the public written modes of communication. But now the internet has broadened or the internet has challenged the distinction between public space and private space. So many people are speaking what they believe in private space, like blog and Twitter, are being also criminally prosecuted. Can I tell you a little bit about that other person who retweeted the North Korean propaganda?
Yes, sure.
His name is Park Jung-un. I appeared as an expert in his case as well. He didn't really post anything himself that he got himself troubled for. What he got in trouble for was retweeting the North Korean propaganda. But he did that with a lot of satire and a lot of exaggeration. Something that nobody will take to be a genuine promotion of North Korean ideas. His retweet, I mean, there's a serious academic discussion going on right now in the U.S. Mm-hmm. as to whether, pressing I like in Facebook is an endorsement of the content that's being liked. And also whether retweeting something is an endorsement of what's being retweeted. That kind of negotiation on, this private showing of one's evaluation of some content is just completely wiped out of the judge's or the prosecutor's mind in South Korea. I think that's a big problem.
Right. Now, before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles and photos and interviews related to our program on our website. So please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbi.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at @gjournalist. I want to ask both of you, now the UN came out with a report that criticized what's happening with the censorship, and the Reporters Without Borders came out with some commentary against it. Steve, first, do you think this kind of outside pressure could maybe persuade the government to make changes, particularly with the decriminalizing defamation?
Yeah, I don't think it can hurt. South Korea is sensitive to how it is perceived in the rest of the world, and it perhaps could be something positive.
Professor Park, what do you think?
Yes, as Steve just said, Korea has been a very cosmopolitan country in a sense that whenever it considers a policy choice, it has delved deeply into what other quote-unquote model countries do. And, you know, UN, when UN speaks, the government does listen. Now, whether the government actually acts upon it will depend a lot upon, you know, what goes on in here. What really makes or breaks is how politically tense the society is, and all these prosecutions on people speaking have really made the political atmosphere really tense and really made it difficult for any political actor to come up with any change. It's only last month that for the first time in Korea's history, a legislator, Park Young-sun, proposed a bill decriminalizing defamation, abolishing the insult law, and also abolishing truth defamation.
Do you think that legislation has a chance of passing?
Well, in a few years or in a few decades. I think that if it doesn't pass, I think that it will at least send a message across the judiciary and the prosecutors as to how the existing laws should or should not be, or if at all it should be applied narrowly to protect people's constitutional rights to free speech.
And Steve, you were going to interject?
Yeah, I was just going to say the irony, of course, is with the UN scrutiny is that the Secretary General of the United Nations is a former South Korean foreign minister.
So he should know what he's talking about then.
Yes, but the UN's human rights scrutiny is separate from Mr. Ban's jurisdiction. So we'll see how things go. And Mr. Ban has been supportive while he was working within Korea, supportive of free speech.
When's the next presidential election?
Coming soon.
December.
December.
This year. So we have a few months remaining. And many people have, questioned whether this is a statutory issue or political issue, meaning whether the laws have to be changed or we just need better people in government to really stay away from this fight and flashpoint on free speech.
Steve, do you see this as being a issue in the campaign for president?
I don't think it's going to rise to that level, but what you have from time to time here in South Korea is you can have a seemingly minor event that becomes a catalyst to raise larger issues and can spark major controversy and even demonstrations on the streets. So you never really know what will happen. This is a very polarized country politically, and the opposition is definitely going to be looking for some sort of campaign issue that it feels can invoke the interest and excitement and passion of the masses, especially if the governing party's candidate becomes a clear front runner.
Yeah, I remember the case of was it 2008 with the American beef protests?
Exactly.
So I wanted to also, Professor Park, find out you personally, where does your case stand, and what prosecution do you face?
It will be a simple case of fine. I'm okay. I'm compared to Park Jung-geun, who was in prison for 60 days for retweeting North Korean propaganda. And Minerva, who was in prison for 100 days for criticizing the government's exchange rate policies. And also, there is another case that I appealed as an expert for, newspaper boycotters. So these are the people who boycotted the newspapers who showed too much pro-government leanings. And these consumer boycotters were also in jail for, 2 months for basically making too many phone calls to the companies that were advertising on the target newspapers. These are something that you will, find shocking. I'm not saying that this happened regularly, and I'm not saying that this happened to everybody. But once the government set an example by prosecuting these people severely, other people are silenced. Minerva's case made a lot of online pundits in South, online economic pundits made them stop writing
right.
online.
Well, I'm
so the internet is becoming poorer in quality and diversity of content because of that.
Professor Park, I think we have to wind it up now.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much, Steve and Professor Park, for joining us. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist. It's produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Raymond Tungekar, who's also our executive producer. David Cawthon and Regina Wang were our lead producers. Now, stay with us for Free Press Watch, and join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist, where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Regina Wang. Today's news comes from Reporters Without Borders and The Telegraph. A reporter in Kazakhstan is this year's recipient of the Peter Mackler Award for Courageous and Ethical Journalism. Lubkan Akhmedirov, who is 36 years old, writes about government corruption and human rights abuses in one of the most repressed countries in the world. His investigative work has earned him numerous threats and harassment from the police. In April this year, neighbors found Akhmedirov covered in blood outside his apartment block in the northwestern Kazakh city. Unidentified attackers stabbed him 8 times across his lung, kidneys, and stomach, hit him on the back of his head, and shot him with an air pistol. He stayed in the hospital for a month. Akhmedirov will receive his award at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. in October. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Regina Wang. See you next week.